beyond the collusion. Be the future you crave.
It's all alive. It's all connected. It's all intelligent. It's all relatives.
When sensory dating channels open, it allows for innovation in response to environmental input.
Runs deep and strong, abundantly bright, earthbound.
For me, when I ingest certain medicinal plants, certain gifts from Gaia, the first thing that happens is a change in my perception of light, a change in luminosity.
We're falling through these times of terror and travesty. Honor life's majesty. Flood the world with your light.
So, plant chemistry represents an enormous sort of cornucopia of molecular diversity.
Yeah, you have to realize the human species has only been around. I mean, if you really extend, you know, to our earliest ancestors, you know, maybe 2 million years, right? The planet's been around for 4.5 billion. Life's been here for between 3.5 and 4 billion years. The plants must have been doing something all that time besides pining away for our emergence. You know, so there's all of these chemical dynamics going on. Every animal on Earth uses plants for healing, and chimpanzees know over 100 different plants to use for medicine. They know how to make them into medicine, exactly how to prepare it, exactly how to take it that is the most effective and when they take it for exactly what they need.
As if your dreams have already come true. Stay in the current, stay in the current, stay in the current. Expand the love that created you. Find the current, ride the current, stay in the current. Within.
Lynn Margulis, that I was lucky enough to speak on a panel with, and she, you know, really deserves the Nobel Prize, which she died not long ago, and of course they didn't give it to her because she was still too controversial, but she finally was the one that discovered that all life forms on Earth were generated out of 4 ancient bacterial forms that combined together in unusual ways in a process she called symbiogenesis, and the mitochondria in our cells that generate energy for us, that consume oxygen and generate the energy that helps us move, were actually former free-living bacteria that she found in the wild, and they were incorporated into other cellular structures as energy factories, essentially. So to find that bacterial colonies have exactly the same sort of structure that we have in ours, it's not really a surprise to anybody that's doing deep Gaian work, but it's a shock to anybody that believes the evolutionary escalator. The thing that happens when a self-organized system occurs is in a living biological organism, the very first thing that occurs is intelligence. And see, that's one of the things that really throws the older Newtonian and really limited Darwinian model into a lot of, a sea of trouble, basically. Because what happens is that any organism to maintain that self-organized state, it's constantly analyzing both the exterior world around it and the interior world inside of it for any kind of change in status. And, you know, some of the researchers I've been looking at that are doing really subtle work with this say that, you know, even the tiniest kind of input that touches a living system like that will throw it in a little bit into disequilibrium. And so at that moment when disequilibrium occurs, the organism has to make a choice of how to respond. It has to analyze the input, create a response to it that will maintain its self-organization. And that moment of choice is called a bifurcation, because it could go in any kind of direction. It can come up with multiple choices of how to do that, and it chooses the one that in that moment it feels will create the balance point most effectively. And that's really at the root of nonlinearity or chaos theory. It's like you can't ever predict the choices that self-organized systems are going to make to remain self-organized. So that's why the weather can never be predicted, why, you know, you can look at things for a certain period of time and you can sort of predict where they'll go, but over long timelines, you just can't. So our sort of reductive science that promised us control of nature, it's just not going to work. And that old system is really falling apart, and there's this new paradigm coming into play that's very disturbing to everything that we have here. All of our industrial systems, our government, most science, most everything is built on that older, reductive, linear, predictive model, but it's not accurate to the world, which is why we're starting to see greater and greater perturbations in the ecology and the responses of the world to human behavior. You always have to ask yourself, what's the function of that plant? Why is that invasive plant here? It's not just because it hates America, not because it hates our freedom. That's not why it's here. It's not here to ruin our lives. There's a reason it's moving into the ecosystem or the eco range it's moving into. And these sort of invisible movements are what is a way to begin to see Gaia by learning to follow your feelings then.
It's my observation that the plant world is really speaking to humans. That this little species, human beings, has an inordinate amount of power on the planetary interspecies community nature level, and that we've gone crazy with it, and we're as a species suffering, and so are many, many others. And I feel that the plant world is reaching out and reminding us and calling to us and enchanting us in all different ways. The psychoactive medicines are one of those ways. In order to use these medicines, you have to be rebel enough against a taboo to look at the taboo. And the whole nature of a taboo is that it's an area of culture where we're told, don't look there. It's not good to even look there. That's what a taboo is. It's not just something that's forbidden. It's something you're not supposed to look at.
Dream a different story called again, I promise you. You'll dream a different story.
The opening of sensory gating channels to work with sensory gating, and that means like when we're sitting in a room and there's all of these visual sensory impulses coming into our eye. Now the thing is, those sensory impulses that are coming in, our eye is literally taking in everything, every visual sensory input is actually coming in simultaneously into our eye and into our brain, okay? The same thing is true of smell. The same thing is true of sound, for instance. If we experienced all of those in our conscious mind simultaneously as they were happening, we would begin to experience a cognitive disruption. It would make it very difficult for us to function. And in fact, that's what happens with a lot of people that are labeled schizophrenic. Their sensory gating is very open. They take in way too much stuff, and they've got this cognitive dissonance or disruption that occurs. What happens is there's various parts of our brain that analyzes the impulses that are coming in or the inputs, and it decides which ones are irrelevant, and it shuts down part of them. Then what's left goes to another part of the brain, and then that gates it again until finally just a very tiny amount gets to our conscious mind. And so that's how we sort of function in the sea of inputs that we're always dealing with. Now, the thing about hallucinogens, because I'm writing in this book also about the function of psychotropics in the ecosystem function, the thing about those particular plants is when you ingest it, the one thing that all of them do is they open sensory gating channels widely, and the more you take, the more widely the gates open. And those are exactly what Aldous Huxley called the doors of perception. And he got that term from William Blake, who originated it. And what happens then is that when the gating channels begin to open more widely, you start to perceive a great deal more of the livingness of the world than you do if they're more closed. And the key to the whole thing is really feeling. If you begin asking yourself, no matter what you're encountering, that lamp, that restaurant, that plant, that shoe, that person, every time you encounter something, if you ask yourself, how does it feel? It's easy to do it. You can just focus on anything, and you just look at it for a little bit, and then you go, how does it feel? And what will happen is, it'll be what the great poet Goethe called, he goes, there'll immediately be an intimation of mood or feeling that you will experience. Every one of those things will feel slightly different. Now, virtually the only people in our culture that regularly do that are artists. Schizophrenics do it without their consent, in a way. they're constantly being raped by sensory data. And the thing is, in any other culture, they would be trained to be specialists of the sacred, because they would have access to what Gottfried Benn, the German poet, called the metaphysical background of the world, the meanings that are underneath the physical forms that we encounter every day. Here, they're just considered to be abnormal and are medicated to try to shut the gating channels down.
Serotonin is referred to as a neurotransmitter system, but it's more than just that. It's also referred to as a neuromodulatory system because it modulates or regulates not only a lot of different kinds of processes in the brain, but it also regulates the activities of other neurotransmitter systems. The psychedelics have a similar kind of role in the brain, although sometimes what they're doing is releasing the control that serotonin has over certain areas of the brain. So for instance, one of the things that serotonin does in the lower parts of the brain is that it dampens or shunts out a lot of information. You don't get most of the information that your body receives in your conscious experience.
Now, psilocybin emerges as quite interesting in this respect because they're so close to the neurotransmitter serotonin. And as a result, they're quite compatible with human metabolism, human and mammalian, I should say. We are well equipped with the enzymes and the molecular machinery we need to metabolize psilocybin. They're orally active. They don't require any monoamine oxidase inhibitor to become active. You just eat the mushrooms, no processing necessary. And they work, so they're very compatible with our own neural chemistry.
These psychoactive molecules that you find so widespread in plants and fungi and animals, you know, this chemical diversity that you find, it goes to the larger question of why do plants even bother making all this stuff, you know, and it's not all psychoactive, it does other things, but the answer is that these things are chemical messengers in the sense that these are the way that plants have evolved to modulate and moderate their relationships with other organisms in the environment. A famous botanist once said, plants have substituted biosynthesis for behavior. And I think it's a profound statement. And what he meant, if it's not obvious, is that animals interact with their environment and deal with their environment primarily through behavior. You know, the flight or fight reaction, all of this stuff. We move around. If we're threatened, you know, we get up and run away. Plants can't do that. They're stuck in one place. So they mediate their relationships with the environment through chemistry. That's why they're such great chemists. That and the fact that they have photosynthesis going for them. So, you know, that's what they do. They synthesize things.
That is the function of psychotropics in the ecosystem, to stimulate innovation in response to environmental stressors. So, and what it does is it opens sensory gating channels. It also, it stimulates new neural net formation in unique ways. It helps regenerate damaged neurons in neural nets. And all the way around, it's really important functioning. So that's just sort of one of those things that nobody's ever really thought about. Nobody's ever really asked the question, what's the ecological function of psilocybin mushrooms? You know, the fascinating thing is when plants are given psychotropics, they get high exactly the same way we do. Okay? There was Gigantus Bose in the early part of the 20th century he figured out how to measure the nervous reactions of plants, the nervous system response of plants to drugs. And he would give them drugs. On alcohol, they would get drunk. You know, on opium, they would get high like opium makes you high. They would even have, if they got really high on alcohol, they'd have hangovers the next day. There's not any difference, you know, in any system like that. So the thing about when sensory gating channels open, it allows for innovation in response to environmental input. Thank you.
who are trying to kind of continue to figure out what the psychedelics are, you know, are they talking to us literally? Are they showing us something? Are they doorways to something else that's talking to us? You know, it's a big question, and we're coming at it new, really, you know, even with 40 years behind us or so. But the impression that I have is really, from these people anyway, is really that these medicines are gateways, that they are a passage through. They have a voice, they have a way of delivering their message, but it's not, the information isn't all there in that species. You go to that species because it knows how to show, it knows how to find certain kinds of information and show it to you if you have the eyes to see it and the ears to hear it. And that's a important part of trying to figure out who are these beings and how can we work together. So you form relationships with a few trusted guides, really, in your lifetime. And those guides are these species. And once you learn how they speak and what they can open doorways to, then you know when to go to that species for what the piece of work is that you're trying to do. It's all work. It's the work from their point of view. It's the work of keeping the world balanced, keeping people relatively healthy, keeping the food coming up from the ground, keeping the rain falling down. That's the curing, the curandero, the curandera. That's what they're doing, is not just healing a person with an ulcer or fixing someone with a broken leg or trying to keep someone with a snake bite from dying. All those things happen too, and they're all very important. But it's this really larger scale balancing, the teetering survival of this community of species that live together in the context of a cultural worldview that appreciates them and names them, and where we help each other. And we help each other partly by recognizing each other. Ignoring each other doesn't, I'm talking about we, the species, we're one of those, we're just one little species. We're just a really loud and show-off species, but we're just one little species, you know, in this incredible biodiversity. And so in this model that I'm attempting to describe, it's about awareness of all of this and of this harmony of species and the occasional disharmony which requires rebalancing. So health is balance, and illness is really the loss of it.
You know, the witches were really the women that knew the plants, and that's really what they were. They were herbalists as much as anything else.
Why schizophrenics are treated that way, the reason why psychotropics are illegal, is because this culture has no interest in gating channels being open, no interest in people accessing the metaphysical background of the world. Because if we do, we'll start to realize almost immediately that everything is alive and aware and interactive. Okay. Once that happens, it makes it very hard to cut down a forest. Once you experience it as alive and living and aware and intelligent and interactive. So basically our culture doesn't want us to extend awareness further than it decides it should go. thing is you can't stop it. There's a drive in all cultures and in all species, every species that exists, to consume hallucinogenics because their sensory gating channels, they're driven to open sensory gating channels because once a sensory gating channel opens more, once you open them further, you start perceiving depths of reality that can't be perceived with normal gating that's become habituated. You start experiencing everything as novel, and you start looking deeper into it, and you start to become aware of connections and dynamics that are going on that can't be seen otherwise. Now, most cultures, especially the American culture, looks at this as only happening in people. But the thing is, every organism that consumes LSD, for instance, or psilocybin, or DMT, it doesn't matter, every one of them experiences the same thing. Every living organism has sensory gating. It has to, because they all have to be able to deal with sensory inputs to determine what's going on in the world around them so that they can respond effectively.
It moves right into these psychoactive species, as well as all the technically not psychoactive, although with imagination and sensitivity, all of them are psychoactive, actually.
My work has been focused on finding a way to talk about that in such a way that it can, you know, work to counteract the older model, but also to help people begin to have mechanisms for interacting with the livingness of the world, for interacting with Gaia, like many indigenous cultures and many of our ancestors have. The thing is, you can't stop it.